Hello, and welcome to the Sunday service of Calvary Chapel Foothill Ranch with Pastor Steve DeNicola.
You know, pastors love to do Facebook survey questions. Have you noticed that? How many have ever seen a pastor post a survey question out there? Hey, you know, what do you guys think of XYZ? And, you know, one pastor decided, you know, for sermon research that he would post a question, but he said to his audience, he said, I don't want anybody to just answer the Sunday school answer, Jesus. And he said, the question is this, when you stop and think about your life, what is the one thing you think if you had or if you had more of this, that it would make your life better? What's the one thing that if you had, or perhaps if you had more of this, it would make your life better? He received many different answers to that question. Someone said they wish they had a better singing voice. Someone said they wish where they were more patient. Need more patience. Another person said bacon. They must have been joking, but bacon does make life a little better, doesn't it? But he took all the responses and grouped them into four general categories that he identified. And those four categories were this: money, time, health, better relationships. Money, time, health, better relationships. And as he thought about this, he thought, you know, at the root of this desire in us to either have more money, more time, better health, or better relationships, really at the very root, the center of that desire, is really wanting to be free from stress. The stress that creates. It's all about stress. If we had more money, we wouldn't stress about our bills. If we had more time, we wouldn't stress about all the things we need to get accomplished. If we have better health, we wouldn't be so stressed out about the things that are taking place right now in our lives, or maybe stressed about what the future may hold. If we had better relationships, we'd have less stress with those that we come in contact with, the people we encounter. So we can kind of boil a lot of our problems down to just the stress that they create. And we really feel like if we could just somehow relieve those problems, that stress that they create, somehow our life would be just so much better. We'd have more contentment in our life. But really, when you start to think about it, the easy path, the less stressful path is not always the better path for us, is it? Because the easy path can often be the wrong path that leads to bad decisions and choices and bigger problems. And the easy path, for a lot of people, can lead to a very unfulfilled, unrewarding, empty life. So we really do feel like if we had more money, more time, better health, better relationships, we would find more meaning and more contentment in our lives. But that isn't necessarily true. And it's interesting as we study this man named Solomon in the Bible, we find out what is really at the heart of contentment. Because Solomon had all sorts of money. He lived a long life. He had good health. And he had very good relationships. And yet, he came to the end of his life. And, well, let me read his words for you in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 10 and 11. He says this, "Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward from all my labor." And then he says, "Then I looked on all the works that I had my hands had done and on all the labor which I had toiled. And indeed, all is vanity and grasping at the wind. There is no profit under the sun. O Heavenly Father, we come to you, Lord, as we study your word this morning. Lord, recognizing that all of the things that we think would make our life so much better, so much happier, really, really we can only find that in you. You are the source of happiness, true happiness. You are the spring of true fulfillment in life. And Lord, all the other things, they're just cisterns, broken cisterns, which can hold no water. And so, Lord, help us to learn and to apply our hearts to wisdom as we study the life of a man who is known for great wisdom and yet also for great folly. In Jesus' name, amen. 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 1. Solomon at this point is at the height of his reign. He's at the pinnacle of prosperity and popularity. Now, when the queen of Sheba heard the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him, it says, with hard questions. We're not sure where Sheba was. We think it was somewhere on the Arabian Peninsula. Sheba could have been, and most probably was, a country we know as Saba. And Saba often had queens that reigned over them. They were moon worshipers. Interestingly, this encounter with Solomon by the queen of Sheba, or Saba, is mentioned in the Quran, in Surah 27. She asked him hard questions. What does that mean, hard questions? These were probably riddles. We don't know the questions he asked, but they were probably riddles. And they were probably riddles that were devised carefully by her counselors to be brought to Solomon to determine whether he really was worthy enough of everything that had been said about him. Was he worthy enough to make an alliance with him? Did he have what it really took? You'll remember Solomon was presented with a riddle back in chapter 3 of 1 Kings. And he found the solution to that riddle very, very easily. Riddles were used in the ancient world really to test and to define intelligence. They were also used kind of like a game. And they would literally wager on riddles and whether you could solve them or not. You might remember the story of Samson and Samson's wedding. And there at the wedding feast, he presents a riddle to his guests. And there's a wager on that riddle. And so these hard questions were probably given to the Queen of Sheba by her counselors to really assess whether Solomon really was as wise as his reputation spoke of him. And I'm sure after that, she came to understand that in this man, God had deposited a supernatural wisdom, and then she started to open up her heart with some of the questions and maybe some of the conflict and the problems that she had personally or within her kingdom. Let's go on, verse 2. She came to Jerusalem with a very great retinue, with camels that bore spices, very much gold, precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she spoke with him about all that was in her heart. So Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing so difficult for the king that he could not answer it for her. And when the queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food on his table, the seating of his servants, the service of his waiters and their apparel, his cupbearers, and his entry by which he went up to the house of the Lord, it says there was no more Spirit in her. Wow. Now remember, God had called Israel to be a light to the nations around them. Israel was to bring the truth and the reality of God to all those nations, and yet to live a life very separate from their deeds, their idolatry, and their wickedness. They were to live in a way that those who didn't know Jehovah would want to know Jehovah because of his blessings and the lifestyle that they lived. So think about this. This trip by the Queen of Sheba to come to Israel was probably a journey of 1,500 miles. Wow. 1,500 miles. It would take about 75 days. That's kind of like the pioneers that came out and traveled west from Missouri all the way to California or to Oregon. It would be a difficult travel and journey by camel, wouldn't it? So look at the effort that it would take for this queen to make this trip and the cost that it would make it. And she didn't just go one way. She had to come back after the trip, right? Wow. So look what else impresses this queen in verse 6. Then she said to the king, "It was a true report which I heard from my own land about your words and your wisdom. However, I did not believe the words until I came and saw with my own eyes. Indeed, the half is not told me. Your wisdom and prosperity exceed the fame of which I heard. Happy are your men and happy are your servants who stand continually before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God who delighted in you, setting you on the throne of Israel, because the Lord has loved Israel forever. Therefore, he made you king to do justice and righteousness." Then she gave the king 120 talents of gold, spices in great quantity, and precious stones. There never again came such abundance of spices as the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. Also, the ships of Hiram, which brought gold from Ophir, brought also great quantities of almug wood and precious stones from Ophir. And the king made steps of the almug wood for the house of the Lord and for the king's house, and also harps and stringed instruments for the singers. There never again came such almug wood, nor has there the like been seen to this day. Now King Solomon gave the Queen of Sheba all she desired, whatever she asked, besides what Solomon had given her according to the royal generosity. So she turned and went to her own country, she and her servants. So she's amazed by his wisdom. But what impresses her more than his wisdom is also he had other characteristics and skills. He had all these skills. He was gifted at administration. He had a character that was admirable. And look how he treats his servants. And many times people that have great wisdom or knowledge or wealth in this world, they don't treat others well at all. They lack in so many other abilities. I think all of us know or have known or heard of doctors that have all this knowledge and they're so brilliant and they have horrible bedside manner. They have absolutely no compassion in their heart for another human being. Amazing. So they have all this up here, but they're lacking stuff down here. But Solomon, he was the complete package. He had all of those things and those skills and those abilities. It wasn't just wisdom. He had all these other gifts that God had given to him. And so the queen came to acquire wisdom, and she also came to be introduced to the knowledge of Jehovah, the Lord. Did you notice that in verse 9? She mentions that. But what's really sad about this encounter is we don't see anything about her worshiping Jehovah. She doesn't worship him. And when she returned to her country, she probably returned to her pagan idolatry as well. Some people debate that, and you can if you want. There's that instance when Jesus speaks of the Queen of Sheba in the Gospel of Matthew, and he says in the judgment that she will, in the day of judgment, she will rise up in judgment and speak against those. But it also says in the Bible that the day of judgment will be the resurrection of the living and the dead. And they will all be judged, right? So Whether she was or not saved, I don't know. But I do know that Naaman was a Syrian. He was a foreigner that came to Israel. He encountered Jehovah. And we know when he returned back to Syria that he worshipped Jehovah. We don't know that about Queen of Sheba. It would be sad for her to come and just find a man of wisdom and not find the God of that man. The weight of gold that came to Solomon, verse 14, yearly was 666 talents of gold, besides that from the traveling merchants, from the income of traders, and from all the kings of Araba, and from the governors of the country. So 666 talents, that's 22 tons of gold. That's almost $1 billion worth of gold. Almost $1 billion in today's money at the price of gold today. We can't just pass by 666 talents without talking about that a little bit. That's a very interesting number, isn't it? That it would specifically weigh out the gold that way and state it for us very specifically. In the Bible, this number, 666, is a number of mystery, isn't it? It's a number of iniquity. Six represents the physical world or mankind. So the number 666 represents man at his very zenith. Man elevating to 3 would be the number of God. Man elevating at its very pinnacle, God-like state. This number 666. What was the source of all this gold? It came from man. It didn't come from God. So he also taxed the people. Notice he has the zenith of all the wealth that he could ask for coming into him, and he still taxes all these people, and all these nations around them are giving him a tribute. All the caravan he's taxing. Why? Because he's not satisfied. He's not satisfied. The key point here is King Solomon's opulence turned to decadence. His opulence literally turns to decadence. And we see a little of that in the next verses. And King Solomon made 200 large shields of hammered gold. So these would be full shields from about here to the floor, the large shields. You've seen them before in different movies and whatnot. Of hammered gold, there were 600 shekels of gold went into each shield. He also made 300 shields of hammered gold. Those would be the smaller shields. 3 minas of gold went into each shield, and the king put them up in the house of the forest of Lebanon. So these were just ornamental. So he makes 500 shields of gold. They're worth nothing for fighting, for battle. They're just ornamental shields. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with pure gold. The throne had 6 steps, and the top of the throne was round in the back. And there were armrests on either side of the place for the seat, and 2 lions stood beside the armrest, and 12 lions stood there, and 1 on each side of the 6 steps. And nothing like this had been made for any other kingdom. So his throne was exquisite and lavishly adorned. And all King Solomon's drinking vessels were gold. And all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. Not one was silver, for this was accounted as nothing in the days of Solomon. For the king had merchant ships at sea with the fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the merchant ships came bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, monkeys. So King Solomon surpassed all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. Now all the earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. Wow. So silver was worthless in this day in comparison to his wealth. His guests would drink on nothing or eat on nothing but gold. All completely solid gold vessels. That's what they would dine on. All these riches are what? All the result of God giving him great wisdom. But still, he's not satisfied. Each man brought his present, articles of silver and gold and garments and armor and spices, horses, mules, at a set rate, year by year. And Solomon gathered chariots and horsemen. He had 104,000 chariots and 12,000 horsemen, whom he stationed in the chariot cities and the king in Jerusalem. And the king made silver as common as in Jerusalem as stones, and he made cedar trees as abundant as sycamores, which are in the lowland. Also, King Solomon had horses imported from Egypt and Kaveb, and the king's merchants brought them in Kaveb, or bought them rather in Kaveb at the current price. And now a chariot was imported from Egypt, the cost of 600 shekels of silver, and a horse 150. And thus, through their agents, they exported them to all the kings of the Hittites and the kings of Syria. So Solomon is gaining even more wealth from all these gifts of the rulers that are given to him. Every year, he's gaining all this wealth into his kingdom. He's amassing this wealth, and now he has to what? Protect this wealth. He's got all this wealth. He's got to protect it. So now he's got to get all these horses and the chariots, and he's gathering all this army of chariots, and he puts them, remember we talked about it last time, in these strategic cities throughout all of Israel. So chariots in that day were like tanks. They were the heavy, you know, weaponry of that day, a chariot and a horse. It was the most feared weapon of the day. And so what does he do? Not only does he gather them, now he becomes an arms broker. He's importing, exporting weaponry to the other countries. Now I want you to just stop here and think how different Solomon is from his father David. His father David wrote Psalm 20, verse 7. Some trust in chariots, some in horses, but we will remember the name of the Lord our God. What a difference between Solomon and David. Wow. So as his riches and his wealth and his fame and his chariots and his horses increased, his love for God is decreasing. Yeah. Solomon was a man who had it all. He had it all. He had the good life, the best life. Certainly, he was the most prominent man, and probably if we were betting people, we would put all our money on Solomon to be the most successful man in all of human history. He had everything going for him. He had a father that raised him in the ways of God. He came into Israel in its zenith. He inherited a dynasty that was an amazing dynasty. He inherited all this wealth. He had wisdom. He built the great temple. He was famous throughout the land of Israel and beyond. He had wealth beyond measure. He had wisdom beyond comprehension. When the Queen of Sheba came and heard his words and his wisdom, it said, it took her breath away? Wow! How could someone who started out so right end up so wrong? How could that happen? So let's kind of just take a peek into the next few verses of next week's lesson, shall we? Chapter 11, verse 1 through 3. But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, the women of the Moabites, the Amorites, the Edomites, the Sidonians, the Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love. And he had 700 wives and princesses and 300 concubines. And his wives turned away his heart. So with all that Solomon had in this world, Solomon had a great weakness, didn't he? Women. That was Solomon's great weakness. 700 wives, 300 concubines. If you're not very mathematical, that's 1,000, okay? Now I want you to notice, he's not really condemned so much for the amount of women in his harem. That's not really where the condemnation comes from so strongly. Yeah, that was wrong, but that wasn't the real big problem. Because in that day, it was a common practice for rulers to exchange daughters to make political alliances with all these countries around them. It was the common, the accepted, the pragmatic way of doing business, of doing politics between nations, okay? Wasn't wise for the people of God, but it was common. His heart went after the idols that these women worshipped. That's where the condemnation comes. So the reason Solomon's marriages were condemned at the heart of it was because they turned his heart away from the Lord. Look at verse 2, remember? It says, Solomon clung to these in love. Wow. How powerful are those words? He stubbornly kept these women. Stubbornly. He foolishly held on to the lust that he had for these women. He was never satisfied. He wasn't satisfied with all of it. But of course, none of us have been so foolish. None of us have stubbornly clung to someone of the opposite sex. But we shouldn't have we? None of us have continued a relationship that was wrong. None of us have clung to sin, even while it was destroying our own lives and the lives of others around us, pulling our hearts away from the Lord. None of us have been so foolish. Why? Because Solomon was never satisfied. And that same problem exists in every one of our hearts as well. It's where are we going to find our contentment? Solomon was a man who had what many people think, if only I had it, I'd be happy. He had it. And he still wasn't happy. The key point, Solomon's heart ruled over his head. And I want you to understand something as we look at Solomon. We're going to look at him more, a little more in chapter 11. He didn't ever completely exclude God from his worship. Never. He just added idols into the worship of God. He didn't exclude God. He added the idolatry into the worship of God. And this is the problem that Gary and Kelly are going to encounter in Thailand. It's a common problem around many of the countries, and I'm sure you already know about it. They're going to say, oh, we like Jesus. Sounds good to us. We'll put him on the shelf with our other gods. And the biggest challenge of bringing the gospel to many of these countries is trying to help them understand that Jesus doesn't want to share the shelf with anyone else. With anyone else. And that's a huge step. Even if they come to Christianity and they come to an understanding and knowledge of the gospel and receive Christ, it's another thing to reject all other gods. And it's the same problem with you and I. We can look at it so clearly over there and see it in their lives. We can't see it in ours. We accept Jesus. We put him on the shelf. But then we add other things upon that shelf. And Jesus says, no, I want to be the only one on your shelf. I want to be the only one that you love, that you worship, that you adore, that you live for, that you'll die for. He wants to be our one, our only. Because as time passed, Solomon started adding more and more time and more idols to his list of gods. And all the time and worship of Jehovah became shorter and shorter and shorter. Wow. So there was no instant rejection of God in Solomon's heart. But in the end, Solomon's heart had been overcome by his love for idols and idolatry. Romantic relationships, they can become an idol that just chokes out our love for God. A job can become an idol. Possessions can become an idol. Fame and popularity can become an idol. All these things can become idols. And what happens is we don't just reject God right away. Solomon didn't. We just start reading our Bible a little less, a little less, a little less. Our prayer time gets shorter and shorter. We start to miss church more often and more often. All these other things take our heart. That's why Lowell in his communion focus, remember what he said? He shared the words of Solomon. Guard your heart. Keep it with all diligence. Why? Because out of your heart flow the issues of life. Wow. And one day, if we're not careful, we'll find ourselves, like Solomon, very, very far from God. Our Bible is rarely opened. Prayer becomes short and impersonal. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6 says, "Now godliness with contentment is great gain." Would you stand with me? Let's make this song our prayers. In the morning when I rise, in the morning when I rise, in the morning when I rise, give me Jesus, give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. You can have all this world. Give me Jesus. And when I am alone, and when I am alone, oh, when I am alone, give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. You can have all this world. Give me Jesus. And when I come to die, yes, when I come to die, and when I come to die, give me Jesus, give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. You can have all this world. You can have all this world. You can have all this world. Give me Jesus. The Lord bless you this week in everything you do. The Lord keep you in all your ways, in your travels, in your journeys. The Lord make his face to shine upon you, that he might delight with you in his favor, that you might know and sense his presence this week in such a powerful, powerful way. Oh, that the Lord would lift up his countenance upon you, that you would abide under his shadow and know that you are dwelling as a son or a daughter in the favor of his love. And the Lord himself, he would give you peace. We'd love to pray for you. If you have any prayer needs, the elders, the leadership, they'll be right here. We'd like to pray with you. God bless you.
We hope God has spoken to you through this podcast. Tell your friends and please visit us on the web at www.calvarychapelfoothillranch.com.